is Mother's Day, and we are celebrating the ladies of our church, and we certainly think that they're all very special, and we're thankful for all of them, and we want you to know, ladies, just how much we appreciate each of you. We are also in a series that we are calling The People God Uses, and we're looking at the early followers of Jesus, specifically his disciples. Now, there were 12 disciples, and of course, when you take Judas out of the mix, then we have 11, and we're looking at those 11 men to see what it was about their lives that God could use to build his kingdom. And then we're asking the question, well, can God use me? If God used them, can he use me today? Can God use me the way he used his disciples? Can God build his kingdom today through me and through you? And of course, the answer is yes. God can use you if you possess the qualities he's looking for. I want to take this celebration of Mother's Day and our series on the disciples and sort of bring them together today, and hopefully by the end of the sermon, you'll see how that works. One of the important things that we're going to see today is just how much Jesus loved his mother. I don't know if you're aware of this, but among the disciples, there were two sets of brothers. There was Andrew and Peter, and we've already looked at Andrew. We'll be looking at Peter next Sunday. And then there were James and John, and we've looked at James, the devoted, and today we're going to look at John, the trusted. You might be tempted when you study the life of John to call him John the loved or John the beloved, because that is normally the way we think of the disciple John. In fact, in his gospel, the Gospel of John, which was written by John the disciple, John the apostle, five times he refers to himself in some variation of the phrase John the disciple whom Jesus loved. If you were writing a book about Jesus, which John did, you would have to be very confident that that statement was true if you were going to repeat it five times. I'm the disciple. In fact, John does not refer to himself by his name. He doesn't say I or me, a pronoun. He normally says that disciple whom Jesus loved. If you weren't positive about that little nickname, you would look rather brash, saying, hey, I'm the one Jesus loved. Look at me. Because he's right at a time that people could check that out. They could go talk to other disciples, other followers of Jesus. Hey, did Jesus really love John? And they would know if that statement was true or not. By the way, for you Bible scholars, if you want a little thing to work on this week, five times John referred to himself as a disciple whom Jesus loved. Now, you are aware that there are several different Greek words in the New Testament for the word loved. Now, the two that are important here are the word agape. In Greek, agapao, we say agape. The idea of agape love is the sacrificial love. It's the love Jesus had when he went to the cross. And then the Greek word phileo, which is, we would say, brotherly love, is the idea behind that word. Now, what's interesting is that of the five times that John uses the phrase, the disciple whom Jesus loved, four times he used the word agape, sacrificial love. And one time he used the word phileo, brother. Why? Why did he change that one time? Let me even give you the reference for that. It's John 20 and verse 2. And I'll set the scene a moment. This is after the crucifixion of Jesus. Mary has gone and discovered that the tomb is empty. And the Bible says that she ran and told Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved, phileo. Why didn't he use the word agape there? I'll let you figure that out. Of course, Jesus loved all of his disciples. So to identify himself as the disciple whom Jesus loved had to carry a significance beyond the ordinary. There's something very special, something very significant about that statement. Why would John have that designation? There was undoubtedly something unique in the relationship between Jesus and John. Well, this morning we want to look at John the Trusted. And I want to begin with his background and his call. I've combined these 2 points this morning because we've covered this material already several times with the other disciples. And John's background is very similar to Andrew's background that we looked at. Is very similar to his brother James. His call is similar to both of them. And so we're just going to review very quickly. The information is found in Matthew chapter 4, and it's rather brief. Matthew chapter 4 and verse 18, it says, Jesus was walking by the Sea of Galilee. He saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. Then he said to them, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. They immediately left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in the boat with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets. He called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. Now there are 2 things in the passage about John, one about his background and one about his call. His background, he was a fisherman by trade. He worked with his older brother James and with his father Zebedee in the fishing boat. And we know from what Mark tells us, they had hired servants also who worked as fishermen. We can assume, I think, from the story here in Matthew that he knew Andrew and Peter. They fished in the same area of the Sea of Galilee. Matthew puts them in close connection, proximity to each other here in his account, almost as if he's connecting them together in some way. It's very likely that Andrew and Peter and James and John had known each other all of their lives. They had played together as boys. They had grown up as teenagers, and now as men they were working at the same trade on the Sea of Galilee. Beyond that, we know very little of John's background. The second thing we learn in the passage is about his call. And his call was just like Andrew's and his brother James. Jesus called and he answered. And immediately they, James and John, left the boat and their father and the hired servants and followed him. John's background and call were identical to the background and call of Andrew and James, who we've already looked at. I want to move on then to his special place. John occupied a very special place among the disciples. He was part of what Bible scholars have called the inner circle of Jesus, made up of just 3 men, Peter and James and John. We looked at it last Sunday in the context of James, but beyond his inclusion in this group that was very close to Jesus, remember they were the ones with him on the Mount of Transfiguration. They were the ones who went with him when he healed Jairus' daughter. They were the ones who went with him into the garden when he prayed, and he left the other disciples and said, you three come with me, and took them a little farther into the garden. Beyond that, I think there is something very special that shows John's position among the disciples. Turn to John chapter 13. John relates this to us himself. John chapter 13. Starting at verse 23, it says, "Now there was leaning on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. Simon Peter therefore motioned to him to ask who it was of whom he spoke. Then leaning back on Jesus' breast, he said to him, 'Lord, who is it?' Jesus answered, 'It is he to whom I shall give a piece of bread when I have dipped it.' And having dipped the bread, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon." The setting here is in the upper room. Jesus and his disciples are celebrating the Passover. It is a night of his arrest and his trials. I find it interesting that on the last night of his freedom, if you will, perhaps either the last night of his life or the next to the last night of his life, Jesus is celebrating the Passover with his disciples. The Passover was the celebration when the Jewish people remembered the angel who passed over their homes when they were slaves in Egypt on the night of the Exodus. And the homes that the angel passed over were the homes where the sacrifice of the lamb had been made and the blood had been put on the doorpost of the house. All of the other homes, those without the blood on the doorpost, in those homes, whether Jewish or Egyptian, the eldest son died that night. But on the homes where the blood of the sacrifice was evident, could be seen, then the angel passed over. And here, the eternal Lamb of God is preparing to make the ultimate eternal sacrifice for sin. And he says to his disciples, "Here's my betrayer. Here's the one who is going to betray me." Notice the position of John in the arrangement of the disciples around the table. He is next to Jesus. In fact, it appears from what he writes that he was very close to Jesus. Now, we're used to seeing the Last Supper as Da Vinci painted it, with Jesus and his disciples all sitting on one side of the table in the photo op here, sitting in chairs like you and I would sit at a dining room table today. But it's more likely that they sat around a low-lying table on some type of cushion as they were eating their meal. And that helps explain John's statement in verse 23 when he says that he was leaning, or he was reclining, on Jesus' bosom. Now, in contrast to John, Peter is apparently at the far end of the table, or at some distance from Jesus. Now, remember, Peter was often the spokesman for the group. He was sort of the self-appointed leader for the disciples. And so he mentions to John, when Jesus starts talking about it, he's going to die, he's going to be betrayed. And he mentions to John, ask him who it is. He apparently wasn't close enough to Jesus to ask that question without raising his voice. So he gets John's attention. "John, who is it?" And John, sitting at a very privileged place at the table. By the way, here's another interesting thing. Do you remember the story earlier of James and John and their mother? And they come to Jesus and said, "We have a request." you remember what the request was? The request was that in the kingdom, I want you to let my two sons sit next to you, one on your right hand and one on your left hand, in the place of privilege, in the place of honor. And of course, Jesus said, that's not mine to give. And here John sits in the place of honor, right beside Jesus. This is, his position here is so significant that we often miss it. And by the way, John mentions it again after the resurrection when the disciples have gone off to fish at the Sea of Galilee and Jesus appears to them and he talks about the disciple that sat next to Jesus. That was when Jesus asked Peter three times, Peter, do you love me? Going back to those two words for love. The first time Jesus said, Peter, do you love me agape? Peter, do you love me with an all-consuming, sacrificial love? And Peter is so overwhelmed, perhaps by his shame at denying Jesus, that he replies, Lord, I love you with a brotherly love. Phileo. Yes, Lord, I have great affection for you. That happened the first and second time that Jesus asked Peter if he loved him. The third time, Jesus changes the word. And he says, Peter, do you love me? Phileo. Peter, do you really have great affection for me? There have been all kinds of theories about why Jesus changed the word. Perhaps he's coming down to Peter's level. Perhaps he understands the heartache in Peter's heart and the guilt that he feels and the shame that he feels. Peter couldn't bring himself to say, Lord, I love you with the greatest love that has ever existed in the history of mankind. Lord, I love you with a sacrificial love. All he could say was, I love you as a brother. I have great affection for you. And as Jesus and Peter were having this conversation, Jesus revealed to Peter that he would die as a martyr. From John chapter 21, then Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following, who also had leaned on his breast at the supper, and said, Lord, who is the one who betrays you? Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, but Lord, what about this guy? What about this man? Again, at this very important point in the story, John identifies himself not only as the one whom Jesus loved, but as the one who sat next to Jesus in that place of honor at the supper, the Last Supper.